If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
My big thing about it is don't criticize something unless you can think of what's one thing I can do. I don't care if it's sending a dollar to Planned Parenthood in the face of or Planned Parenthood's political arm that's trying to stop a lot of the relentless attempts to defund Planned Parenthood. Do something about a problem or else don't criticize it. So that's really, this is a time, if ever there was in my lifetime, this is a time for activism.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth interviews Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey, who discusses the unusual political moment we find ourselves in. Then Senator Booker takes a few more questions backstage exclusively for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
The Trump administration spent the weekend whipping up racial tensions with a transparent political stunt, while the humanitarian crisis in Puerto Rico continues and the president engages in Twitter battles with everyone from North Korea to members of his own party. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. No matter what else is happening in the Trump reality show, right now we cannot forget that over 3 million American citizens are still living through a humanitarian emergency in Puerto Rico. Of course, Trump would like you to think that he's devoting all of his attention to the crisis there, as he tried to show at an event for Hispanic Heritage Month on Friday with the way he pronounced Puerto Rico.
We are also praying for the people of Puerto Rico. We love Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico. And we also love Puerto Rico.
There is a good chance he actually thinks those are two different things.
We love Puerto Rico, and we also love Puerto Rico, which is, of course, pork with rice. Rico.
Of course, Trump received a deluge of justified criticism from Puerto Ricans themselves when he chided them for the cost of their recovery and threw paper towels into a crowd of hurricane victims. And in an interview on Saturday with former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, who, of course, is also the father of Trump's own press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Trump slammed the media for criticizing his paper towel toss by claiming the Puerto Ricans actually loved it.
They had these beautiful, soft towels, very good towels. And I came in, and there was a crowd of a lot of people, and they were screaming, and they were loving everything. And I was having fun. They were having fun. They said, throw them to me, Mr. President. And so I'm doing some of the...
Oh, my God. They were screaming, throw them to me, because they were in desperate need of supplies. What is wrong with you? You're like a lifeguard who thinks he's popular because people keep yelling for a life preserver. Also, can I ask you something? Did they love it? Because look at this photo. That guy is looking at the photographer like, are you getting this? And can we go back to the beginning of that clip for a second?
They had these beautiful soft towels, very good towels.
Trump has clearly never used or even touched a paper towel before.
These towels, they were incredible. Usually, when I spill something, I just use Eric. Let me be your sponge, Father.
Now, Now, Trump has in the past claimed that he invented the term fake news, which he did not. But as he continued to attack the media for criticizing his Puerto Rico response, on Saturday he went even further, claiming that he, Donald Trump, came up with the word fake.
The media is really the word, I think one of the greatest of all terms I've come up with is fake. I guess other people have used it perhaps over the years, but I've never noticed it.
I'm sorry, what? You never noticed anyone use the word fake before? You never heard anyone describe your hair, tan, university, foundation, net worth, marriages, or business? I mean, seriously, how have you never heard the word fake? For a while, I thought he might be illiterate. Maybe he's just deaf. If you were secretly deaf, you would do this all the time. How was your weekend, Mr. President? We'll find out soon. And yet, despite Trump's whining about the media coverage, the humanitarian crisis in Puerto Rico remains very real. Millions of American citizens in Puerto Rico are still without water and power. So what were the leaders of our government up to this weekend?
Another NFL Sunday featuring a political protest, not just by players. The Veep left today's game between the Colts and 49ers early. This after some players took a knee during the national anthem.
I left today's Colts game because the president and I will not dignify any event that disrespects our soldiers, our flag, or our national anthem.
Players aren't protesting the flag or the soldiers or the anthem. They're protesting police brutality and racial injustice. Anyone who claims the protests are disrespecting soldiers or the flag or the anthem is, I wish there was a word for it.
One of the greatest of all terms I've come up with is fake.
Oh, yeah. That is a good word. Thank you for inventing it. Now, Pence claims he was genuinely offended and decided to leave when he saw the players kneeling. But very quickly, it became clear that this was all a transparent political stunt orchestrated by Trump and Pence. For one thing, it was revealed that the reporters traveling with Pence, who would normally have gone into the stadium with him, were told to stay in the van because there may be an early departure from the game. And then there's the fact that right after Pence tweeted that he left the game, Trump, who can't stand anyone else getting attention, jumped into the fray with his own tweet. I asked VP Pence to leave stadium. If any players kneel disrespecting our country, I am proud of him and Second Lady Karen. So Trump, who's supposed to be a media mastermind, immediately went on Twitter to publicly admit that he and Pence had orchestrated a political stunt at taxpayer expense. He's like a magician who finishes a trick and then goes, I had an extra card up my sleeve. That's how I did it. That was how it was here the whole time. It didn't matter. Your card didn't matter. It was here. Soon it turned out that basically everything about Pence's stunt was fake. For example, on Sunday, Pence tweeted a photo of himself and his wife in Colts gear with the caption, looking forward to cheering for our Colts and honoring the great career of number 18 Peyton Manning at Lucas Oil Stadium today. Go Colts. Which would have been convincing, except for the fact that Pence tweeted the exact same photo in 2014 when he was the governor of Indiana. They are so bad at faking this. Although, who knows? If there was ever a couple that would look the same in every picture, it would be Mike and Karen Pence. Here we are at our wedding, and here's our honeymoon, and of course, the birth of our first child. That was a special day. Yesterday was also a reminder that we can't get lost in the circus of Donald Trump and fail to properly evaluate Mike Pence. And this is serious, so I'm going to say it the way Mike Pence would. Don't for one moment forget that even though he speaks softly with furrowed brow from a small, serious mouth, Mike Pence is a liar on equal footing with the president. They deliver their lies differently. The president fast and wild, as though his mouth was a fire hose. Whereas Mike Pence lets them seep out slowly, like a fart from a constipated man. And now I'd like to read Psalm 23. When Jesus said, keep the van running, I'm only going in for a publicity stunt. Of course, even as he fans the flames of this controversy, Trump continues to claim that he has bigger things to worry about, an argument he used in the interview with Huckabee on Saturday when defending his many attempts to repeal and replace Obamacare. although I'm not sure his argument made much sense.
I want to focus on North Korea. I want to focus on Iran. I want to focus on other things. I don't want to focus on fixing somebody's back or their knee.
I'm sorry, but nobody wants you fixing their knee. Waking up from surgery and seeing Donald Trump as your doctor would be an actual nightmare. So Trump says he wants to focus on North Korea, but when he does, he only makes the situation worse, like on Thursday when Trump made this bizarre and cryptic comment while taking photos with a group of military leaders at the White House.
You guys know what this represents?
What storm, Mr. President?
You'll find out.
You'll find out. When? Next week on the series finale of Earth? He's not even making sense anymore. He sounds like a drowsy toddler after oral surgery. He's gonna have to start doing press conferences from the back of his mom's sedan.
You will find out soon.
Now, obviously, Trump's rhetoric toward North Korea has frightened a lot of people, including Tennessee Senator Bob Corker, a Republican and chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, who said he will not seek re-election next year. In a stunning comment, Corker said last week that people around Trump, like Defense Secretary James Mattis and Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, separate our country from chaos. And Trump clearly did not like that remark.
Here's what the president tweeted. Senator Bob Corker begged me to endorse him for re-election in Tennessee. I said no, and he dropped out, said he could not win without my endorsement. He also wanted to be Secretary of State. I said no thanks. He is also largely responsible for the horrendous Iran deal. Hence, I would fully expect Corker to be a negative voice and stand in the way of our great agenda.
You know, if our lives weren't hanging in the balance, nothing would make me happier than Trump using hence. It's like the scarier things are, the fancier he writes. I can't wait for Trump's next tweet.
Nuclear war that heretofore was not an issue is underway. Thus, I am off to bunker. Cheerio.
Now, of course, it will not shock you to learn that Trump's tweets were lies. It turns out it was Trump who offered to endorse Corker and asked him to run again. And Corker, one of the tamest members of the Senate, was clearly annoyed with Trump's tweets because he fired back on Sunday morning. It's a shame the White House has become an adult daycare center. Someone obviously missed their shift this morning. Oh, snap! You got corked! That's a United States senator, a Republican no less, straight up calling the president of the United States a baby. Corker went even further in an interview yesterday telling the New York Times that Trump was treating his office like a reality show with reckless threats towards other countries that could set the nation on the path to World War III. But here's the thing. Corker's criticism is important to hear, but let's not let him off the hook. He and the Republican Party not only allowed Trump's rise, but actually encouraged it. Corker even appeared with Trump at a rally last year and in an interview praised Trump's campaign and his temperament.
He is not like people think that he is. One of the most courteous, kind, respectful. You can see it throughout the Trump organization.
Courteous, kind, and respectful? Not even Trump's best friends say that about him. The nicest thing anyone who actually knows Trump has said about him is he's a real son of a bitch. He thinks he invented the word fake. But this is urgent. Politicians of both parties are warning us that our president is volatile, unstable, and incompetent. He's staging transparent political stunts to rile up his base while he recklessly mismanages everything from North Korea's nuclear threat to the humanitarian crisis in
Puerto Rico.
And also in
Puerto Rico.
This has been a closer look. Our guest tonight is a United States senator representing New Jersey. Please welcome to the show Senator Cory Booker, everybody. Welcome.
It's good to be here.
I'm very happy to have you here.
I'm really grateful that you invited me.
Now, before you were a senator, you were a mayor.
I was.
And I would imagine that once you become a senator, all of a sudden the breadth of what you need to know gets so much larger. For example, a mayor of Newark doesn't need to know foreign policy.
I had a lot of problems with my international house of pancakes.
So yeah, exactly.
I did.
And so what was it like when you first had to sort of undertake the learning about things that are so important?
I mean, even before I got to the office, I called around from literally active generals to foreign policy experts. But it's never like the first time you have to deal with a real issue. And I'll never forget the first time I was invited to the Situation Room. It was the Vice President Biden was meeting with us, and I was so awkward. I think it was my first days literally there, and I'm excited. I still can't believe I'm here.
Yeah, you're a senator now. You're in the Situation Room. That's a big deal.
It is a big deal. My mom always says behind every successful child is an astonished parent. And this is one of the moments I'm astonished. I'm sitting there, and The vice president is ridiculously late, and we're all just sitting there awkwardly. And it was one of the best moments for me because there's Al Franken, and one of our other Senate colleagues asked him, well, who was ever the worst guest on Saturday Night Live? And before you know it, here I am, sort of awkward, sitting there, intense and ready, and Al Franken, who is one of the more brilliant senators in the United States Senate. He's incredibly talented, gifted.
Yeah.
But he is also wickedly funny.
Yeah, he likes to tell a story, too.
He had me literally fighting back the tears, laughing so hard as I'm sitting there. And then the vice president comes in and we get going. But look, it is regardless of what you think about partisan politics, whatever, walking onto that Senate floor, especially for me, most Americans don't know, we haven't had that many African-Americans that have served in the Senate. I'm the fourth African-American popularly elected in the United States Senate. So I never lose my sense of gratitude to New Jersey, nor my sense of history of what it means to walk on that floor every day that I do.
You obviously walk on that floor with colleagues on both sides of the aisle. We mentioned earlier in the show, one of your colleagues, Senator Bob Corker, he is retiring. And it seems like when senators retire, don't take this personally, they get a little bit more honest. And so he used this opportunity to say that Donald Trump, is adult daycare, requiring of adult daycare, that he might be starting World War III. When you hear those comments, do you sort of nod your head and say, oh, that's what we are thinking on this side of the aisle? Or are you sort of shocked that it's even happening?
Well, first of all, this isn't new to, this is one of the worst kept secrets in Washington that Republicans and Democrats are very worried about the person that's sitting in the White House. And literally during the confirmation, I voted against most of Donald Trump's appointees, Jeff Sessions, Pruitt, DeVos. These are people that had me really concerned. But you got a guy like General Mattis, and the conversations surrounding that were, let's make sure we put the Secretary of Defense, somebody that we can all rely on to try to be a bulwark, a wall between Donald Trump and disaster.
It seems that's an unfair thing to ask of the people that keep getting mentioned as the ones who are supposed to save us from danger, because it seems like being the Secretary of Defense or the Secretary of State, those jobs are hard enough without also having to keep an eye on the president, not ruining everything all the time.
Look, and obviously this is a comedy show, but this really...
Sometimes, this, yeah.
On a good night.
In and out,
on a good
in and
night.
Out.
On
yeah,
a good
yeah,
night.
Yeah.
But I'm very concerned right now. I mean, we have crises all over the planet Earth, serious things. We've lost some soldiers last week in Niger, and there are hot spots from Ukraine to Syria to Nigeria. I mean, you can go through the challenges. And we're in a really bad spot. Not only have we had our Secretary of State, who should be the leader of diplomacy, but you have an administration who has been savagely cutting diplomacy, even just funding the kind of things that help keep regions stable. Donald Trump's willingness to speak in a manner about nuclear war that is, to me, terrifying, frankly, about the consequences of someone who decides to conduct foreign policy that way. I'm on the Foreign Relations Committee with Senator Corker. I've been grateful for Senator Corker's leadership in trying to keep us together in a bipartisan way to push back against the White House. So we have work to do. This is a very serious reality, especially with the important role the United States has been playing in stabilizing regions with high instability, in dealing with global terrorism. We've been a very good leader, and right now it seems we're pulling back and operating in a manner that has our allies. I just recently met with some ambassadors from various countries that we're allied with. This is a very perilous time, and all Americans not just should be joking about it, but we should be concerned we're in the state we are. And I don't think patriotism, right? I would like to see people on both sides of the aisle not just talking about this. I think we all need to be doing more about this.
I want to ask as well about you coming from Newark and being a mayor, where you're actually connected, I think, to a place more than senators can be sometimes, because they're in and out. You were in Newark. You were living and breathing in Newark. And gun control, you just co-sponsored a bill to ban bump stocks. But I think your experience in Newark is that handguns are still the biggest issue when it comes to gun control. What are the steps, as someone who actually, lived in a city where that was an issue, that you think we could take as a nation?
Well, I very proudly still live in Newark, and I live in the central ward of the city. It's a low-income community, and we deal with these realities. In fact, as what happened in Las Vegas, my mom lives in Vegas. It's a terrible tragedy, and it should grieve us all. But in addition to that, though, in the aggregate, every single day in America, we have a mass shooting in the aggregate. And communities like mine, you know, right around the time that we had the shooting, horrific shooting of, in fact, one of our congresspeople got seriously wounded, there was a shooting on my block, literally across the street from where I live. So this is something we Americans, millions of us, deal every single day with high levels of violence. And what I found out in Newark is it's actually not law-abiding citizens that are doing these shootings. They're criminals who so easily, in this climate, can easily get their hands on guns. And so when you have these massive loopholes in the law that Democrats and Republicans, gun owners and non-gun owners, all think, in fact, over 80% of gun owners think it's crazy that we live in a nation where a suspected terrorist could go to a gun show and fill up a trunk full of weapons exploiting the terrorist loophole. The overwhelming majority of Americans think we should do something about it. Congress has not acted, and this is outrageous, and we should rightfully point out the NRA, but please understand that we in America, we forget the power that we have to make change. You know, the civil rights movement, we didn't get civil rights legislation because Strom Thurmond sat there and said, oh, okay, yeah, I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna give equal rights to folks. No, it was Americans demanding it, fighting for it, getting up every single day. The opposite of injustice, of justice, is not injustice. It's indifference, it's inaction. And we as Americans who believe this passionately have to get engaged, have to start pressuring, have to start pushing, have to start fighting, or else I fear we're gonna see this continuing on a daily basis, dozens and dozens of Americans punctuated by these mass shootings. It's gonna continue to happen until we stop it from happening and pass reasonable gun safety legislation in our country.
Well, best of luck. I'm pulling for you there. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Senator Cory Booker, everybody.
Hi, this is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey.
Thank you for having me, Henry.
This is such an honor to be speaking with you.
I'm really psyched. I've never done this before, a late night and then do a afterward podcast, which
is kind
of cool.
Yeah, you've done late night shows and you've done podcasts, but the combo is new.
It is a great 1-2 punch, especially because you say you have 7 minutes and it goes like in 2 seconds.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
Yeah, everyone says it goes super, super fast when you're out there.
Yes.
When you were out there, you guys were talking about gun legislation, what you want to do. When you were in Newark, you did something really interesting on guns. You took guns off the street and melted them into jewelry.
Yes.
Can you tell me about how that worked?
Well, you know, we had an incredible artist who came to us and said they had the idea to try to sell jewelry made out of the guns that we've gotten off the streets and then reinvest money back into our efforts to get guns off the streets.
Right.
And created this wonderful virtuous circle, but also gave people reminders that we're not powerless in this fight against violence in our communities. And I just thought it was a really great physical reminder that I can't just curse the problem. I've got to somehow try to figure out a way to be a part of the light that gets rid of that darkness.
Right. It's such an interesting, unique, kind of unexpected policy that you could bring forth in Newark. As someone who legislated that way as a mayor, is it frustrating when you get to the Senate that things move slower, that melting guns into jewelry would be much harder to implement, I imagine, as a senator?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, look, I love the fact as mayor that I could literally wake up with an idea and in a matter of weeks, sometimes days, execute on that idea and see the actual change. I still live in Newark, so I just love being able to drive around and seeing blocks we turn into farms or lots that we turn into affordable housing. So it's a different rhythm in the Senate, even though you can get that feeling from helping individual folks who have challenges with immigration or with the VA. But turning ideas into solutions takes a lot longer, but the impact is vastly bigger than often as it was as a mayor.
Right. So since Trump has been elected, I think a lot of us have been saying this is not normal.
Yes.
Something will happen, and we say this is not normal. That phrasing really frustrates you.
Well, look, first of all, we are at a crisis where I worry that behavior that's so outrageous is happening with such frequency that people are getting numb to that. But I really just caution people to sort of get stuck in what I think of as a state of like sedentary agitation. When you're so upset about what's going on in the world, but it almost paralyzes you where you're just sitting there as a witness. Mm-hmm. Things don't change by sitting on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. And allowing someone to, even if the frequency of the injustice to stultify you or put make you in some ways cynical, where you throw up your arms and say, there's nothing I can do. That type of surrender of power to me is unacceptable. And you or I would not be here if it was for people under things that were more outrageous and more abnormal to our moral values, just sat there and did nothing. And,
right.
and so my big thing about it is don't criticize something unless you can think of what's one thing I can do. I don't care if it's sending a dollar to Planned Parenthood mm-hmm. in the face of or Planned Parenthood's political arm that's trying to stop a lot of the relentless attempts to defund Planned Parenthood. Do something about a problem or else don't criticize it. And so that's really, this is a time, if ever there was in my lifetime, this is a time for activism.
Yeah. Well, on that note, you talk a lot about your work in the Senate revolving around this idea of courageous compassion
yes.
and working with the other side and believing in the other side. Maybe not believing in your side, but working with the other side and kind of understanding where they're coming from. And I'm wondering how you hold true to that when your Republican colleagues are sometimes not acting in good faith, when they're hiding healthcare bills. I mean, you and some Democratic colleagues went to the CBO just yes. to look at the bill. How do you think about this idea of courageous compassion in this era of politics?
So I'm going to stand my ground on issues. You know, there's no way I'm going to let anybody come after the healthcare of tens of millions of yeah. Americans and not stand strong and be ready to fight like hell and creatively and show the absurdity of it like we tried to, me and Senator Schatz and mm-hmm. Senator Murphy tried to do during the healthcare debates. But what I worry is that we also have to be a society that looks at this world and doesn't demonize others. Mm-hmm. You know, especially along party lines, which yeah. I hear all the time, where people make these broad brush things, like the Democrats or the Republicans, yeah. where we stop listening to each other, stop searching for that common ground, because in the span of our lifetime, it's very hard to control both houses, have a 60-vote majority, totally. And do everything the Democratic way. You have to find yeah. common ground. And the truth is, what I found is that most of us agree more than we disagree, or the lines that divide us are nowhere near as the common values, the lines that that tie us together and bind us together. And so, you know, this is the truth when it comes to things like we talked about on tonight's show, like gun violence. Mm-hmm. There are things that over 80% of gun owners agree with Democrats,
totally,
with most Democrats. And the question isn't... you know, this where we disagree. The question is, in the areas that we agree, can we manifest a sense of common purpose mm-hmm. to do big things, mm-hmm. to not only protect life and save life, but even for me, what's even more exciting, as a nation that led to the moon, the nation that mapped the human genome, can we lead on the things that are causing us common pain, whether it's cancer or pollution or the things that are hurting our children? Can we understand that we have this common pain and really fight to find that common purpose?
Yeah. Last thing I want to ask you, you and Seth were talking about your first moment in the Situation Room.
Yes.
In your last book, you talked about your first time voting, which I think people voting in the Senate, voting as a member of the
yes,
Senate.
Yes.
I didn't realize this is actually kind of a tricky thing to figure out how to actually. You have policies you want to vote on, but the actual right. voting can be hard.
Well, I don't know if it's tricky for others, but it was tricky for me. I mean, it was really one of my life's more embarrassing moments because, you know, I have a degree in political science. You know,
Rhodes Scholar.
Yeah, maybe that as well. and you know, but I never knew. Like, I actually knew how the House votes. I knew there was a card and buttons to push and all this, but in the Senate, I just never stopped to think. When it's time to vote, like, what do? Do you write something down and hand it in? I just didn't know what the process was. So I literally have just been sworn in and we're doing my first vote ever. Mm-hmm. And they call my name and I sort of freeze. I'm like, I wasn't paying attention to how other people voted. I'm B, so I'm at the top. You know, right. So it's not like comfortably at a, you know, a W or a Z where you could have watched other people.
Yeah.
And they call my name and everybody pauses because this is my first vote.
Yeah.
And I have no idea what to do. And thank God my senior senator, Bob Menendez, was there, who's been such a good friend and mentor. he like says, Corey, just raise your hand and say, I. And it was literally, I did it. And there's supposed to be a certain decorum, even for the people witnessing in the gallery of the Senate, mm-hmm. but everybody bursts out laughing at me. And I have this old saying, I judge the closest of my friends by how much they tease me.
Sure.
And so at that point, I became very close to all the people that were witnessing my first official duty as a senator, of which I did not know what to do.
Amazing. But you got the vote recorded.
I got the vote recorded.
And many more since then.
And hundreds and hundreds of others. And I've got you know, now I've got some style points with my, you know, yays and nays.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah, of course, you know. I put some bass in my voice.
Yeah, give me an example of a yay and a nay.
Yay. No. I go a little Motown.
Yeah,
go a little
yeah.
deep and low. No.
Right.
No, but it is interesting. There are times, you know, where we've had very dramatic votes, and you definitely yell out your feelings, and you it's catharsis in some ways,
right.
to say no.
And I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One day, maybe when I'm on my way out, I will maybe give a hell no. You never know. I've already pushed some of the limits of
was
the
it
Senate rules.
Boehner who said hell no in the House? Was it Boehner? It was on healthcare.
Oh, really?
It was. I think he was. Like, was this a clear, open process on Obamacare? Hell no. And he was, like, getting people to chant hell no.
Oh, no.
So they came in. Well, that was in the House. So in the Senate, you might be.
Yes. Well, there's definitely a different decorum in the Senate than there is in the House.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Senator, what a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
I've enjoyed this. And I hope I get a chance to come back with Seth. That definitely went past.
Yeah. He'll be back. This was such a treat.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. And by the way, I said this to Seth, and I'll say this on the podcast. In a nation right now where things are so absurd, it's almost as if you need comedy. You need people who can point out the absurdity of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the role that comedy has and satire has. Because you see these normal newscasts that are trying to report the news, and they can't capture the outrageousness.
Yeah.
In a way that skillful comedians can, and this is why I appreciate your show, because in many ways this is not fake news. You guys are this is not like the Daily Show used to say, a fake news show. You're reporting the straight news. You're like literally pulling quotes out, but pointing out the absolute absurdity of it, and we've seen this with some great satirists in generations past. And I grew up on people like Richard Pryor, mm-hmm. listening to my dad's Richard Pryor albums, who back then, especially bigotry and racism and Jim Crow, and these were some things that were so absurd, but somehow the comedians could not only push the limits of culture to wake up and understand and motivate people towards making change. But the other thing it does for all of us, I think, that watch Seth at night, there's also a catharsis in it, too.
Definitely.
The pain that has built up from watching other people be hurt or other things. This has been a rough week from rolling back.
And it's Monday.
You know, that's stunning to me that you're saying that. But in the last 7 days, I mean, you've seen them taking away, restricting access to birth control. Yeah. You've seen the comments of Corker, or even uh-huh. just the horror, in my opinion, and horror is, I think, the right word, of Harvey Weinstein, mm-hmm. and the revelations that have been associated with that.
Yeah.
And in some sense, what you all do in this show may seem, some people might want to call it entertainment, but I think there's definitely been times, I still remember when I was mayor, you know, I would come home at the end of a very tough day, curl up on the couch with my two best friends, Ben and Jerry, and turn on TV and hope somebody would make me laugh. And there's a healingness in that and a catharsis. So I just want to thank you for what you all do, especially right now, in this point in our culture as a country, in this moment, and under this presidency, I think you all are playing a very important role in the civic space that is not only helping and inspiring people to do something about the absurdities, but also healing and giving a needed catharsis at the end of long days.
Well, thank you so much for saying that. And thank you for the work you do as a public servant and as a United States senator.
You know what's great about, I think this, you know, often people say in the darkest times, the best of us come out. Mm-hmm. And I think that this idea of citizenship, I think all of us are feeling our citizenship more, like the responsibilities.
I went to an airport and I didn't have a flight. I mean, me and hundreds of thousands of thousands of people went to airports when they didn't have flights. People showed up for the women's
march. But I promise you, you're a young guy, I promise you that you're going to be a granddad telling your grandchildren about when these things were happening, I stood up, I did something. And I don't care. I see this with reporters now in a way that I didn't feel in the past, where they are suddenly understanding I play an important role that our founders understood. It was literally written into the First Amendment, and I am playing my role of citizenship. So
I just
appreciate the way this time is bringing out the best in many of us to stand up and engage and take our role seriously. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate it, at least in my circle of friends. I had this happen to me literally in church yesterday. People who understand I screwed up, I did not vote, or I screwed up, and I understand now the consequences of not exercising my civic responsibility.
Right. Well, yeah, it's inspiring to hear you say that, that there is, you know, and I think you're right, in this really dark, frustrating time, there is this light, and there is this new sense of citizenship, of what it means to be American, what it means to protest, and what it means to be involved and engaged. And again, thank you for doing what you're doing as a senator.
No, thank you.
It's been such a pleasure.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
You notice how these guys have just like both of them.
They both stood up.
Their body language.
I'm getting the rap.
But isn't that crazy? It's like this, they're trying to be subtle about it. But they're encroaching our personal space here.
They're grabbing the mics.
Dude, you need to go back to Jersey. You have an early morning.
What came first? The chicken or the egg? Spoiler alert. It's neither. At Happy Egg, we believe happiness of the hens is what actually came first. Because without happy hens, there would be no such thing as happy eggs. You know, eggs with delicious orange yolks. Those come from hens who are raised the happy way on 8-plus acres of family-owned farms. Choose happy at happyegg.com and look for the yellow carton at a store near you.
Happy
Egg.